The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
And now we cross over to the lunchtime doctor, where we've got Dr. Brittany Dean. Good afternoon to you, Doctor.
Good afternoon, Tuska. How has your weekend been?
It's been good.
Yes, I hope everybody had a very relaxing weekend. So we just heard that one of my dear friends, Miss Janelle Fong, she was crowned Miss Universe last night. I attended the show and it was fantastic. So I'm so happy to see her journey, and I'm so happy to see her represent us on the stage in Mexico. So it was a really, really insightful and exciting weekend for me.
Well, congratulations to her as well, and I'm sure she's going to do us proud.
Yes, she will. But today we are going to be discussing, of course, medical topics. We had a health fair in Gulf City Mall on Saturday, which was very good. We had a great turnout. Everybody learned a lot. We talked to the public about dengue because, as we know, it's an epidemic right now. However, today I want to talk about a condition that not a lot of people bring awareness to, and that is psoriasis. So when we think of health, yes, we think of our physical health in terms of how we're feeling, in terms of our body, and of course our mental health. But sometimes we glaze over skin conditions. And the fact of the matter is a lot of people suffer with skin conditions on a daily basis. I mean, even some of us, we don't even know that we are suffering from probably age spots, sunspots, all these different things. But psoriasis is something that is autoimmune and something that really and truly we should be discussing a little more often. August is actually Psoriasis Awareness Month. So we're going to bring a little light on what psoriasis is, what are the signs and symptoms of psoriasis, who get psoriasis, or who do we usually diagnose it in? And are there any risk factors? And of course, what are the managements for psoriasis or this particular skin condition? But while we're talking about this particular topic, of course, we answer any medical questions here. We invite all medical questions. So if anybody has a question on diabetes, high blood pressure, anything that you would like to know from a doctor, please feel free to send us a WhatsApp message or even call in to tell us about your experience. If you have had psoriasis, if you know somebody with psoriasis, and how do they manage it?
Mm-hmm. Let's give the numbers again. 625-2257 and 306-1065 is for WhatsApp.
Yes. So today, let's just discuss what exactly is psoriasis. I mean, a lot of people may not have heard the word before, but it is a condition that I would say that we do see on a daily basis, especially in a dermatology clinic, etc. But what is that exactly is psoriasis, and how does it affect the skin? Well, psoriasis, as we know, is a chronic autoimmune skin condition. And when I say autoimmune, what I mean is that in autoimmune conditions, people who suffer with autoimmune conditions, their body, unfortunately, starts to attack itself. So it's not because of any sort of external factors. It's just that their body and their own immune system starts attacking their own cells. So there are a plethora, so many other autoimmune conditions. But psoriasis is an autoimmune condition that affects the skin. And what happens is that in those persons, their body's immune system mistakenly attacks their healthy skin cells, and that causes what we call a rapid cell turnover. So usually the skin cells take about a month to cycle through. So in a person who is not diagnosed with psoriasis or any other skin condition, our skin cells actually regenerate a month or a little more than a month every month. But in psoriasis, this process itself is sped up to just a few days. So you can imagine how distressing it must be for somebody with psoriasis whose skin cells or skin is actually turning every few days. And this actually results for them in an accumulation of their skin cells on the surface of their skin. So what they usually have, or what they usually experience, is thick, red, scaly patches on the skin. And this could appear anywhere on the body. Although what we usually or most commonly see is that they have it on the elbows, the knees, the scalp, as well as the lower back. So usually places that tend to get drier easier. So of course the elbows, in a normal person or in a person who's not diagnosed with psoriasis, even when we don't moisturize our elbows or knees, we do see that dryness. But in somebody who is experiencing psoriasis, it is about 10 times more, or it is 10 times more noticeable in a person who is suffering from psoriasis.
So we're talking about psoriasis today.
Yes, mm-hmm. Psoriasis. And I was just saying that not a lot of people may not have heard the word psoriasis before, but it is something that we do commonly see, or we see that we see psoriasis in a lot of patients in the dermatology clinic. Uh-huh. And it is actually Psoriasis Awareness Month. Okay. So I thought that it was appropriate to bring light to the skin condition, because yes, when we're talking about health, physical health matters, mental health matters, but of course our skin health also matters, because the skin is the largest organ in the body. It is the part of ourselves that the entire world sees. So it is important to know about our skin health and skin conditions and how they can manifest and be treated.
All right, beautiful. So I know you may have touched on, you know, what exactly it is, but what actually triggers psoriasis and the flare-ups?
So psoriasis can actually be triggered by so many different factors. So I would say that there are several factors that we do see the most, or the things that trigger or worsen somebody's psoriasis would be stress. Emotional stress especially is a common trigger for flare-ups. So if somebody is going through something very emotional, something that brings up a lot of emotions, or even if a lot of work-related stress, these things tend to cause a lot of flare-ups for people suffering with psoriasis. If somebody has infections, so what we do know is that there are certain types of infections. So there's bacteria called Streptococcus, or streptococcal infections are a known trigger to a specific type of psoriasis that we will discuss later. And we usually see this, or these infections, causing psoriasis in children. Of course, injury to the skin. This is something that we also see in persons suffering with psoriasis, causing those flare-ups to become worse. So any type of cuts, scrapes, insect bites even, and even sunburn. So if you go out in the sun for too long and your skin becomes very burnt, or it becomes very red, what tends to happen is that this can also lead up to a flare for somebody suffering with psoriasis. And there are actually certain medications that can cause flare-ups, or that are known to cause flare-ups. So anti-malarial drugs, so drugs that we take to treat malaria, and of course certain it's called beta blockers, these have actually been proven to be linked to psoriasis. And of course we can't forget lifestyle factors, so smoking, alcohol consumption, and even obesity can exacerbate flare-ups of psoriasis. So psoriasis, yes, it is a condition that can exist in certain people, but there are certain things that can be done to make the flare-ups worse. And these are some of the things that I just mentioned. But of course, this list is not exhaustive. So really and truly, for somebody that is suffering with psoriasis, it is important for them to know their own specific triggers. And of course, preventing the flare-ups involves managing those triggers as much as possible.
Did you mention anything about what food, something you eat or something you could drink?
Of course, in lifestyle factors, there are people who certain foods will cause certain flare-ups, especially if you do have a coexisting allergic reaction to certain foods. Of course, you want to avoid any foods that causes you to flare up. So there are foods that can help make psoriasis better, things that have research behind it, for example, omega-3 fatty acids. But of course, everybody will have their specific triggers that make it worse. Of course, if you have emotional stress, for everybody suffering with psoriasis, this may be a trigger that is common to all of them. But somebody may have a trigger like a certain food that may not cause a very severe flare-up in somebody else with psoriasis. So that's why I'm saying it's important for each specific person who is diagnosed with this disease to know their specific triggers.
All right, folks. Of course, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, Dr. Brittany Dean, today, Monday. We're on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, and Sky 99.5. Of course, in between, if you feel free to give us a call or WhatsApp message, we do take any of your medical questions at 622-2257. So feel free to give us a call. Let's get a question here. Good afternoon, Doc. Wonderful and interesting program. Can you tell me, please, what causes, well, this is off topic, cataract in the eyes, and is there any drops you can use, the black castor oil? Is that good to use for the eyes? Thank you very much.
Right, so cataracts, it's usually a common eye condition, and what happens in persons with cataracts, the lens of their eyes actually become cloudy, meaning that their vision is decreased, and they can develop slowly, affecting either one or both eyes. But the most common things that we see causing cataracts would be, of course, aging. That's actually one of the most common causes of cataracts. It's just the natural aging process. Over time, the proteins in our lenses, they begin to break down and clump together, forming cloudy areas. Some people just have a genetic predisposition. And of course, there are medical conditions associated with cataracts. So things like diabetes and any type of eye injury can lead to cataract development. There are certain medications. Smoking has actually been proven to cause or lead to development of cataracts, and even alcohol consumption. So there are several different things that you have to take into consideration when somebody is diagnosed with cataracts. But usually the most common thing that we do see is that aging process. So the older you get, the more predisposed or the more likely you are to develop cataracts. Now, in terms of the management, there are no drops that actually, or there's nothing proven to say that drops can dissolve cataracts, no. But there's surgery that can, surgery is actually the only definitive treatment for cataracts. And of course, you need to do your regular eye exams to help monitor any type of cataract development and when to decide your best time for surgery, etc. But for those people who do have coexisting conditions like diabetes, etc., lifestyle changes will definitely become very important. So, of course, controlling your blood sugar, eating a healthy diet, reducing or smoking cessation, and of course, reducing any alcohol consumption. And there are certain visual aids or vision aids that you can use in terms of eyeglasses or contact lenses to help with your vision if you are suffering from cataracts. But I definitely do not suggest putting anything that is not recommended by a doctor into your eyes. The eyes are very sensitive, and the eyes are one of those areas that you can easily manipulate, and it can turn out very badly. Because remember, that's where your vision comes from. You don't want to put anything into your eyes that can lead to blindness or full blindness. So I would definitely suggest, if you do think that you are suffering from cataracts, that you do go and see your eye doctor and let them prescribe what they think is appropriate for you.
I hope that person listening takes the advice of the doctor. Mm-hmm. All right, so we have another one here about diabetes. Hi, good morning. I have high blood pressure and I'm taking my tablets, but sometimes it's still high and I have an irregular heartbeat. Well, high blood pressure, yeah.
Okay. So if this person is suffering from high blood pressure and they do have an irregular heartbeat, of course, you need to ensure that you are doing your regular checkups. by your doctor. But if you're taking your medication and your blood pressure is still high, you also have to take into consideration, are you doing things within your life to increase your blood pressure? For example, are you in a stress-related environment constantly? Are you exercising? What is your diet like? What is your sleep like? So all of these things, remember, medication is not the only thing that you have to consider when you are diagnosed with a condition. You have to take everything holistically and everything into perspective. So if you're only taking a certain dosage of medication, but your life is still, you're not eating properly, or you're not exercising, or you're not even sleeping properly, all these things can lead to stressful triggers throughout the day. So your medication is not going to work appropriately if your body is not working appropriately. And also in that case, if you are on certain medications and you are living a fairly healthy lifestyle, maybe the dosage of the medication itself is too low for you and you need a higher dose of medication to get a proper result in terms of your blood pressure reading. So I would suggest, if the blood pressure medication is not working and you are living a fairly healthy lifestyle, please go back to your physician so that they may up the dose of your medication or even change the medication, because sometimes certain medications work better in certain individuals. But I would definitely suggest that you keep a log, and this is for everybody suffering with high blood pressure and even high blood sugar. You keep a log of all your readings, whether it's, of course, in the morning, at lunchtime, and in the evening, so that every single time you go to your physician, they know that this has been your reading constantly. Your meds have been working for you. You have been living a healthy lifestyle, and maybe we need to just maintain this medication, or this medication has not been working for you because your blood pressure is still constantly high or your blood sugar is still constantly high. So these logs are very important when doing a consultation with those suffering with high blood pressure and high blood sugar.
Just have another one here. This one is coming in a voice message. So let me just play this person's voice note here. So listen up.
Also to doctor, I'm on glucotent.
All right, first he sent another one. Let me hear this one here.
Good afternoon, doctor. Something I'd like to ask you, can psoriasis be caused by bathing in, like, you know, you have a barrel of water, you know, just put there, like, for that purpose, bathing and stuff, could psoriasis be caused by that? Pencil and Alphagan for the blood pressure in my eyes, you know, to keep it kind of steady, but sometimes it still remains high. I was wondering if there are any fruits or vegetables or anything holistic that could also be used, you know, that could help keep the pressure in the eyes at a particularly low level.
So we have two questions about pressure in the eyes at a low level, and of course, can psoriasis be caused by bathing in barrel water or even dirty water, as a matter of fact?
Okay, so what I would say is, remember we talked about psoriasis being an autoimmune disease, meaning that there are genetic components to it. So usually 1/3 of the people with psoriasis have a close relative with the condition. So it's an autoimmune disease, meaning that a lot of external factors, for example, if you're bathing with dirty water, etc., it can cause other skin conditions. But when we're talking about psoriasis, it's not likely to cause an autoimmune condition like psoriasis. So what we have found in terms of things that are risk factors for psoriasis would be your genetics, our race and ethnicity. So it is more common in people of Caucasian descent, but it's less common in, I would say, the Asian populations, or in the African populations. But in Trinidad, we do see people who suffer with psoriasis, not extremely often, but it's not as uncommon, if you understand what I'm saying. We do see it as often as you would see a dermatological condition. But there are other risk factors, of course, a family history of psoriasis, people who smoke, people who have high stress levels, and of course, people who are obese. These people are at a greater risk of developing psoriasis. And it could be because of genetic components and because of autoimmune components as well. But bathing in barrel water, etc., these can cause other skin conditions if there are certain types of infections in the water, or if there are certain types of other parasites, etc., in the water. But to say that it can cause psoriasis, it is not very likely to cause psoriasis. Now, in terms of the pressure in the eyes, usually when we see a high pressure in the eyes, what tends to happen is that we're more likely to diagnose a condition called glaucoma. And there are certain foods that can support eye health and manage the condition by reducing this pressure in the eyes. So things like green leafy vegetables, spinach, kale, these things are high in antioxidants and they actually support eye health and may help in lowering that pressure in the eye. And this is called the intraocular pressure. Of course, omega-3 fatty acids, again, high in anti-inflammatory properties and will improve your blood flow in the eyes. There are some citrus fruits or fruits that are rich in vitamin C. But of course, if you do have other existing conditions like diabetes, you do have to take into consideration how much fruit you have on a daily basis, because those people with diabetes can't have as much fruit as somebody who is not diagnosed with diabetes. And foods that are high in zinc, so things with beef, pumpkin, seeds, lentils, all these things, vitamin A rich foods as well. Vitamin A is very good and very crucial for maintaining good vision and supporting our overall eye health.
All right,
so
we
carrots,
do.
Carrots, sweet potatoes.
All right, let's get a call coming in there. Hello, good afternoon, caller. Thanks for holding.
Doc, good day. So, trying to learn something here. It's very strange that cataract, is it the black part of the eye? I see some people, the black part of the eye covered whitish, and then they go blind. Is that cataract?
Yeah.
And which one is worse, glaucoma or cataract? And, Doc, I'm telling you, I see my eyesight. I treat my eyesight like gold. I didn't know smoking could cause you to get cataract. I learned something here today because I tried to take good care of my eyes. I don't play with my eyes. I do want to smell, hear, feel, but you see, if I lost my sight, I don't want to live. Big man thing, I'm telling you. My sight is important. Thanks a lot, Doc. We listen.
No problem. In terms of the cataracts, what he was asking about is how exactly does it look like? How would somebody know? And the lens of the eyes, usually it becomes very cloudy or opaque. So they do have that whitish or milky appearance in the eyes. So I don't know, Base, if you've ever seen it, maybe in a grandparent. We usually do see it in the aging population or in the elderly population. The lens of their eyes, it becomes a bit cloudy and it looks like, you know, it is actually just kind of fogging up the eye itself. It has a hazy appearance. Some people may even have yellowing or browning of their eyes. And the pupil itself, that is usually the black part, the middle part of the eye. But in advanced cataracts, it may actually appear white and even yellowish because of that clouded lens behind the eye. So he is right. You know, those people, usually the black part of the eye does become white or gray or cloudy. So that is usually what cataracts look like. But to say in terms of cataracts versus glaucoma, now glaucoma itself, it can be acute or chronic, meaning that it can happen quickly or it can be slow progressing. So again, it depends. There are different types of glaucoma. It depends on the type of glaucoma that you have. But cataracts, it's usually slow progressing. So we usually see it developing over time. If you do have acute glaucoma, that is usually worse than a slow progressing cataract, because acute glaucoma can cause you to lose your eyesight immediately. It's usually very painful. So in that case, we would say that glaucoma is worse. But there are certain conditions that can lead to glaucoma versus cataracts, etc. But of course, that is a whole topic by itself. Maybe later on this week, I can touch on glaucoma and cataracts. But yes, I would say that having one over the other, it's not really saying one is worse. It really is dependent on what you are comparing it against because of the different types of glaucomas, the different types of cataracts, etc. One type may be worse than another. So it really is dependent on the person, their existing conditions, and of course, the type of glaucoma they're experiencing or the cataracts they're experiencing.
All right, so let's get back to our psoriasis questions. How does psoriasis impact a person's physical health beyond the skin?
Right, so I would say that beyond the skin, psoriasis, it's really more than a skin condition. A lot of people say they see the plaques because, of course, it's external. That is what you will see on the outside of your skin. But it's actually a systemic disease, and it can have a wide-ranging effect on your overall health. So people with psoriasis are actually at an increased risk for several other health conditions. And there's actually something called psoriatic arthritis. So people with psoriasis, about 30% of those suffering with psoriasis, this can lead to joint pain, joint stiffness, and even swelling of the joints. So remember, I think in an earlier episode, a few months ago, we spoke about psoriasis and about arthritis and different types of arthritis. Psoriatic arthritis is actually one of those types of arthritis. So when we think arthritis, we generally think about osteoarthritis, but there are many different types. And having psoriasis actually predisposes you to a specific type called psoriatic arthritis. So people with psoriasis, meaning that they have this external scaly patches on their bodies, they also have that internal pain, stiffness, and swelling. So about 30% of people who are suffering with external psoriasis do have this arthritis. Now, people with psoriasis as well, they do suffer from cardiovascular or heart diseases. So there's a higher prevalence that we've seen of heart disease in people with psoriasis, and this is likely due to chronic inflammation within the body. Remember, we said that psoriasis is an autoimmune condition. So your body's own immune system is attacking its healthy skin cells, and it may be attacking other cells in the body. So persons with psoriasis, because it is an autoimmune condition, may be experiencing chronic inflammation throughout the body. People with psoriasis are also more likely to develop what we call metabolic syndrome, and this usually involves obesity, high blood pressure, as well as type 2 diabetes. And what we know about obesity, high blood pressure, and type 2 diabetes is that they are lifestyle diseases. So we are seeing how some of these lifestyle diseases actually come into play when it comes to skin health as well. And more than just these physical diseases, people who are suffering with psoriasis, they do have a higher likelihood of suffering with certain mental health conditions. So, of course, depression and anxiety are among the two most common mental health conditions that we see in people who are diagnosed with psoriasis. And this is usually because of the visible nature of the disease. Remember, having these red scaly patches all over your body or on the elbows, on the knees, places that are very visible to the world, along with chronic pain and itching and burning. This can lead to a lot of emotional distress. So psoriasis, yes, it is a skin condition. It's an autoimmune condition, but we're seeing how it can affect our body physically and how it can affect the mind mentally and emotionally as well.
All right, okay. And of course, the psoriasis impacts a personal physical health. Well, beyond the skin, we just spoke that. But can you explain? Yeah, the emotional and physical effects. Well, let's take a call first as it's coming in. Hello, good. Mm-hmm. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to all. Dr. Brittany.
Good afternoon.
Hello? Yes, you're sounding fine, so I don't have to ask. I'm calling to get some answers regarding to my 76-year-old uncle. He's very claustrophobic. That's what I'm about to say, right? He did an eye test. Actually, he postponed, he got scheduled for cataract surgery, but he postponed it two times because of this claustrophobic feeling that he has, right? Now, his problem is that on his right eye, it's about 60% with cataract, and the left eye is about 20%. So he's still seeing, right? But he is 76 years old, and he's very, very afraid of doing any kind of, you know, going under anesthetic or any kind of thing like that. And he's afraid. But he is, he keep on asking me that, you know, I'm 76 years old. Well, he's 76 years old. And he maybe have about 10 years to live again. And he was wondering that if that spread could affect him so much so that it would affect his seeing, well, if he lives about 10 years again. You know, I don't know if you understand the question. You know, he's definitely afraid to go to do the cataract surgery. He canceled it two times already. Right? So I'll listen up with that.
Right. So, first of all, yes, cataracts can lead to blindness if it is left untreated. And of course, the progression to blindness typically takes years. And this progression, I would say, the timeline will vary widely depending on certain factors. For example, the type of cataract, the individual's overall health, does he have other comorbidities? And of course, both eyes are affected, one being more affected than the other. In terms of going for the surgery, if he is in proper health to do the cataract surgery and does not want it to progress to blindness, I think that cataract surgery is usually the best course of action because that is the most definitive treatment. That is the most definitive treatment for cataracts currently. But like you said, if he is claustrophobic, what he can do or what you may be able to do for him is carry him for something called cognitive behavioral therapy. It's a type of therapy that helps you identify and challenge irrational thoughts, especially if it's related to certain phobias, in this case, claustrophobia. So sometimes they gradually expose the person to the feared situations in a very controlled and supportive environment, and this will help them manage their anxiety and reduce their fears over time. And there are relaxation techniques that can be tried, deep breathing, progressive muscle relaxation, visualization, all these different things. You know, people think that, you know, trying to work on the mind for certain phobias does not work, but that is not the case. You know, the problem actually is in the mind when we're talking about phobias. So going for certain types of therapy, doing certain techniques, doing mindfulness and meditation, all these things do contribute to alleviating the thoughts of these phobias. So remember, phobia is not it's not a physical thing. It is something that exists within the brain and within the mind. So, of course, we need to work on the mind to help to get rid of these phobias. But in terms of him developing blindness due to cataracts, there's a high probability, especially given his age and especially given the fact that he may have other existing medical conditions as well. Even if that's not the case, because he's had cataracts, he's possibly had it for years, the progression can be sooner or even later, depending on people or depending on the certain individual. So I would definitely say try to work on the phobias so that he can possibly go and get the cataract surgery done.
All right. Once again, folks, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, Dr. Brittany Dean. We're on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5 and Sangeet 106.1. And speaking of Sangeet, we do have a question here for Sangeet. Good day, Doctor. What is good for arthritis?
Right. So in terms of arthritis, like I said, there are different types of arthritis. So we sometimes we have to know what specific type of arthritis we're dealing with. But in general, we usually, when people say arthritis, it's usually referring to osteoarthritis. So managing osteoarthritis is really a combination of these lifestyle changes, sometimes alternative therapies to reduce pain and improve your function and quality of life. And in certain cases, or in more severe cases, medical treatments are required. So for in terms of medication, some people find relief with over-the-counter pain relievers. So non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, or something we call NSAIDs, to help manage the pain. But because we are in an epidemic with dengue right now, NSAIDs are not something that we would recommend to patients because of that increased risk of bleeding if you do have dengue. So there are other options that you can try that are over-the-counter for pain relief as well. But when we're getting into other types of arthritis, of course, there are things that are prescribed by a doctor. There's physical therapists that you can see in terms of joint functioning and muscle functioning when it comes to arthritis. So certain exercise programs that are tailored to strengthen your muscles and your joints and improving your flexibility. And there are even joint protection techniques that can be used for persons suffering with severe arthritis. And exercise is always good. I mean, some people may find it painful, but doing low impact activities like swimming, walking, cycling can actually improve your joint function without excessively straining yourself. And you want to maintain a healthy diet, one that is balanced to help manage your weight and reduce any stress on your joints. So anti-inflammatory foods like fatty fish, leafy greens, and nuts can be beneficial. And if you are obese or overweight, weight loss or reducing excessive weight could definitely alleviate any pressure on your weight-bearing joints. And some people even use heat therapy and cold therapy. So warm baths, heating packs, all these things to help relax the muscle. And of course, ice packs to help reduce any inflammation and numb the pain. So these are just a few things for general management or at-home management of arthritis. But of course, if you are experiencing something that is severe, it is always best to go to your physician, because some people may have coexisting medical conditions and they may be prescribed certain medications to help alleviate any pain. Or even if you have a specific type of arthritis, certain medications will be prescribed to you.
All right, we do have a call coming in. Hello, good afternoon, caller. Welcome.
Well, basically, if I get confused now, because he has glaucoma and the other one as well.
What, cataract?
Cataract, right. So
cataract.
He's getting the what's showing him in the medicine, Zalatan and another one, the dropster, for the glaucoma. No, the doctor tells him there's no medicine for the
cataract.
Is that true? Yeah. Because I know here you see, if it's left untreated, that is the cataract. If it gets worse, So there's a treatment for cataract then. Thanks a lot.
So there's cataract surgery. Surgery is the most definitive treatment for cataracts currently. There's no medication or no eyes of the cataracts. There are medication and medical therapy for glaucoma. Now, in terms of treatment, they are possibly prescribing medications to treat his glaucoma, quite possibly because the glaucoma could be something that is more a pressing matter than the cataracts. Remember, cataracts can be very slow progressing. Now, glaucoma in certain cases can progress to something at a more rapid rate than cataracts. It can progress to blindness at a more rapid rate. But there are treatments for the glaucoma, medical treatments that he can take for the glaucoma. But usually for cataracts, the most definitive treatment is surgery.
All right, let's get back to another. So Ryan says, question. So if left untreated, right, what are the potential complications of psoriasis if left untreated or poorly managed?
So psoriasis itself, if it is not managed appropriately, it could lead to severe several complications, one of them being severe psoriasis. So in severe cases, what we do see is that the psoriasis or the patchy or the red scaly patchy areas can cover large areas of the body. And this leads to a lot of discomfort, pain, and of course, significant psychological distress on this particular person. And psoriatic arthritis, like we spoke about before, that without treatment, the psoriatic arthritis, it can cause permanent joint damage and leading to disability in these persons. And of course, we spoke about there's an increased risk of other conditions. So increasing the person's risk of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and metabolic syndrome. And there's something in particular that is very severe when talking about psoriasis and if it is left untreated. And it's going to sound like a big word. It's called erythrodermic psoriasis. And this is a very severe form of psoriasis that can be life-threatening. And this is due to extensive skin inflammation and peeling. So it will actually disrupt the person's body's ability to regulate their temperature and protect against infections. Because remember, our skin is the largest organ in the body. Our skin regulates our body temperature. It provides that stability for our internal organs, our internal body, in terms of temperature. And it also protects our body or our internal organs from any type of infections. And that is why when we're doing surgeries, when we're doing anything to cut into the skin, it has to be sterile, because we don't want any external infections or external bacteria going into our body, because it can be fatal. Our skin actually protects us from these external pathogens. But if our skin has all these red blotchy patches on it and it's constantly itching and the person is constantly breaking that skin barrier, that actually leaves your skin open for infections, potential infections from the external environment. So if somebody does get this form of psoriasis, if they leave it untreated, it definitely can be life-threatening.
All right, folks, once again, you listen to The Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangi 106.1, and Sky 99.5. Make sure to call us up or message us for any of your medical questions. So I know the guy just asked about, somebody asked about arthritis. I read that message, and you just made the clarification between, chronic conditions like arthritis. Any other chronic conditions could connect with psoriasis?
Yes, like I said, there's a well-established connection between psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis, right? But people with psoriasis, like I mentioned before, they are at an increased risk for other chronic conditions like cardiovascular disease or heart disease, diabetes, and depression. So due to the systemic inflammation associated with the disease, people who are suffering from psoriasis, as much as we like to deem it a skin condition, they do suffer from other chronic conditions as well. So it's not just something that is affecting your skin. It affects every part of our health, our physical health, our mental and emotional health, and yes, our skin health as well.
All right, a question coming in here, there, Doctor, regarding glaucoma. I heard a treatment for an injection in the eye is helping. For how long do I have to take that injection?
Now, in terms of glaucoma, there are several treatments for glaucoma, and usually they are prescribed in terms of either eye drops, or even some people take certain medications. There are injections for glaucoma, and it usually refers to a form of the treatment that involves injecting the medication into the eye or around the eye to help manage that intraocular pressure. And of course, we want to reduce, in terms of doing this, we want to reduce the risk of vision loss. Now, the injections are generally used when other treatments, for example, like I said before, the eye drops or the oral medications are insufficient. So these injections are called anti-VEGF injections. meaning that they target particular growths within the eyes or particular growth factor within the eyes that actually contribute to the growth of certain abnormal blood vessels in the eyes. And while primarily it is used for other conditions, it can sometimes be used in specific cases of glaucoma when there's, of course, abnormal blood vessel growth. And there are even steroid injections. And the benefit, I would definitely say, of using injections over eye drops or oral medication is that it directly delivers that medication to the area that is affected, which could be more effective for some patients. But like I said, it's usually used in cases where the eye drops and the oral medications are not working, because there are risks that come with doing an injection in the eye, like infection, inflammation, and even vision changes. Now, in terms of how much or how often somebody will have to do that specific treatment depends on the person, depends on the type of glaucoma they have, and the intraocular pressure within their eye. So this is going to be tailored to that specific individual. I can't give you an exact time frame because they are specialized treatment options.
All right.
And yes.
Let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Yeah, I have two questions. I'll leave one for next week, Doc. Say the question. If somebody gets totally blind, right? Is there any eye transplant in Trinidad or any passage you use eye transplant so they get back their eyesight? Thanks again.
Right. Now, in terms of eye transplant, there are doing an entire eye transplant. I'm not too sure if we have that technology yet, but what I would say is that medicine is always advancing. So maybe somewhere in the near future, maybe somebody may be, it's not possible currently, but there are several related procedures and treatments for severe eye conditions. And some people like to refer to it as eye transplant, but completely in the sense of fully replacing an entire eye, it is not possible. But there's corneal transplants. And if somebody has a damaged or diseased cornea within the eye, yes, there are corneal transplants, there are retinal transplants for certain parts of the eye, but we can't replace an entire eye. Not that medical technology has not been available yet.
All right, somebody's asking about psoriasis. Is psoriasis contagious?
No, psoriasis, I think one of the biggest misconceptions that people do have about psoriasis is that it is contagious, and that is actually not true. So it is in terms of supporting somebody with psoriasis, definitely we need to take into consideration that one, psoriasis is not contagious. Like I said, it's one of the biggest misconceptions that it is contagious, but it is an autoimmune condition, not an infection. So it cannot be passed from person to person. Remember earlier we were talking about how if you're bathing in a bucket of water, that can cause psoriasis. It is very highly unlikely because it is not an infection, like I said, but there are other skin infections that can be contagious. But psoriasis is not one of them because it's autoimmune. Another misconception is that psoriasis is not caused by another misconception is that psoriasis is a result of poor hygiene. In reality, I would say that cleanliness and everything, it has nothing to do with how often a person bathes, etc. But as somebody who is diagnosed with psoriasis, they should try to keep their skin as clean as possible. But it is not due to any sort of uncleanliness or anything to do with your hygiene. It is an immune system dysfunction.
Right.
Another thing that I want to say is that, unfortunately, because it's autoimmune, psoriasis cannot be cured, but it can be managed.
We have just about 5 minutes. Let's take this final call. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
To find out what is really good for weakness of the entire body.
Okay. Mm-hmm. when we're talking about weakness of your entire body, is it due to just lack of sleep? Is it due to inability to exercise? Or is it due to certain medical conditions? So, of course, we have to take into consideration the entirety of why you're experiencing weakness, because fatigue or weakness can be a result of other medical conditions that you may have underlying. But somebody who is just experiencing low energy, or if they're just exhausted from a full day's work or exhausted throughout the week, etc., there are certain things that you can do to amp up your immune system or to amp up your energy levels. One of those things that we do like to recommend is B12, and you can get B12 from either food sources. You can get it from certain vitamins, and you can get it in an injection form. So there are some people who do go and get B12 injections and they do get that boost of energy. But I would always say that you need to combine these things with lifestyle changes or lifestyle factors. So maybe sometimes the foods that you're eating, fatty foods tend to weaken people. Fatty foods tend to make people feel sluggish, etc. But if you're eating foods that are rich in antioxidants or anti-inflammatory properties, these things are going to boost your immune system a lot more. So green leafy vegetables, omega-3 fatty acids, anything that can get your energy levels up, anything that you usually have in a balanced diet, staying away from refined sugars or refined carbohydrates or a lot of the processed fatty foods, these things definitely will help to lower your immune and your energy levels.
Right.
And of course, you want to ensure that you have proper physical activity on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. All right, we just have about 2 minutes, Doctor, and somebody asked a question which I think should be our final question pertaining to psoriasis. Any over-the-counter meds for psoriasis, or what are some of the latest treatments for psoriasis?
Now, in terms of psoriasis, there are certain medications that people can be prescribed. And what I would say is that if you do think that you have psoriasis, please do go and see a dermatologist about the condition prior to trying a lot of things on your own. But in terms of the treatments for psoriasis, I would definitely say there are something called emollients, over-the-counter creams that can help to manage the itchiness and the burning sensation of the condition. There are certain creams that can help that. Keeping your skin moisturized on a daily basis definitely does help. And of course, cleanliness will help a little bit in terms of the itchiness and the pain relief. But to get a proper gauge on your psoriasis and the type of psoriasis that you may have, because we didn't get to touch on it, but there are different types of psoriasis. It really is imperative that you go to a dermatologist, and if they do recommend certain prescribed medications, that you take that into consideration as well as your lifestyle factors.
All right, Doc. Well, we just have about 25 more seconds. So very interesting topic today. I know it's got to be gotten some calls there.
Yes. And of course, I hope people take into consideration that health is not just physical, not just mental and emotional, but it can have that sort of external aspect to it as well. So as important as other parts of our body, that is what we portray to the world. That is what our skin is, what actually makes that barrier for us to not get infections and helps to create that homeostasis within our body. So skin health is just as important as every other part of our body.
All right, folks, you've been listening to The Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5 and Sangi 106.1. Thank you, Dr. Brittany Dean. We'll catch you tomorrow. And of course, everyone, do enjoy
Goodbye. The
rest of your day and be safe.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.